Hello and welcome back to the What the Fork therapy session. Sunderland lost again in a game that pretty much I don't think anyone really cares about. But you said you wanted a podcast, so this is your fault. You asked for it. A couple of people said we could have the weekend off, but not enough. So yeah, here we are. Gonna try and pick the bones out of some stuff, get some listener questions, ask some daft things. It's Graham back hosting, by the way. I know you all preferred Dave last week, but I have brought Dave along. So how are you, Dave, the preferable host of my podcast?
I'm glad you're back, mate, even if everyone else isn't. So, very well, thank you. And I'd love to say I'm looking forward to this, but I'd be completely and utterly lying.
One thing I would say, I know people feel that Dave was the preferable host last week, the better host, if you prefer. But he did refer to Bradley Sharp as Bradders repeatedly, which is a bit like calling Kevin Phillips Phillipsy. I'm not having it. So in some ways, you should be pleased I'm back. Lee, you also held down the fort last week whilst I was drinking cocktails. And now I'm back to this shite. How are you? You all right?
I'm all right. Just waiting for the season to finish so we can press reset on the whole thing and start again in the summer.
We could just stop going. We could just end it. We don't have to go back to it. Like, we
But
don't.
that the build though. I don't think we will go back though. We bring it all on ourselves.
If anyone's listening to this and thinking, "Oh, I can't go back. I have to go back." You literally don't. Like, stop in your tracks right now. Think, is it ever going to be a happy time? Probably not, based on very recent and prolonged history. But yeah, definitely don't do a podcast about it. You see occasional new podcasts popping up and you just think, oh boys, if only I could give you some stories. But yeah, Sunderland lost 1-0, Dave. Didn't really mean anything. We had some shots. Dodgy got mad. The gaffer. How are you feeling a day later, Dave? It's honestly, I can't, like, it's just been like this for weeks, and we're going to go into listeners' questions, but I might as well just ask you the fluff question. Oh, how do you feel?
I just don't care.
I know, I like, and it sounds weird, there's not a Sunderland podcast to be like, I don't care, but I just don't. Like, I'm not bothered. Like, honestly, like, when you did it last week and I was away in America, like, I laughed my head off when Watmore scored. Like, I was like just wandering around DC, right? Sunning myself up, having fun. And I was like, ah, Duncan Watmore scored. I was just like, and then I seen it was a pretty good goal. I was like, oh,
That is just the epitome, isn't it? Like you've got to find the fun and stuff like that. But yeah, there's just nothing happening. Like people are, we can all have our opinion. Luke 09's bit of basketball. He was trying to remind you that he was in America, or that you were in America, should I say? It's stupid. It's pathetic. But to be honest, it's something to talk about because there ain't much else to talk about. Do you know what I mean? It's absolutely minging. There's nothing to buy into with football clubs. You need to buy into something, whether it's a star player, whether it's the manager, whether it's the style of player. We've got none of it. Jack Clark's coming back from like an injury, and he's at the end of the season, he's on the beach. We haven't got a full-time manager. We haven't got a style of player other than stick 11 men behind the ball and try and frustrate people. So there's nothing to buy into. And that's not really the Sunderland way, is it? So it's a little bit depressing at the minute. But hey, we can always help Chef Wed stay up next week. What more do you want? No pun on what more at all.
I mean, I went on a preview show, right, as a guest during the week. And obviously you had the preview show as well, which I was a bit annoyed about because the two Watford lads are class. But like, I completely understand no one giving an absolute shite about listening to the preview show during the week. Shoe, the preview show even. But on the preview show I went on as a guest, they were like, oh, we haven't won at home since November. I was like, ha ha ha, don't worry. Don't worry, boys and girls, because Sunderland are in town. And I said they would beat us 1-0, even though I said 0-0 on the preview show. And I was right, really. But it's just Lee, it smacks of where we're at the minute, doesn't it? Look, and you know, the brighter days will come ahead, and there's plenty of ways that this can turn around. You know, I'm sure we'll get on to it, but there's been some strong links towards managers today, which is good news, I think, based on the fact that, you know, we need something to happen. You've got to hope that the recruitment is right, and there is plenty of opportunities to learn from the mistakes. And in many ways, at least we're stuck in the middle of the table and we're not got any worries about relegation. But it is really hard to get your teeth into any of this at the moment. And I think, I don't think you could have expected it to go as bad as it has gone under Dodds, as much as like the warning signs were there that it could. And I think the big problem now is the fact that, as we said at the time, I think when Mike Dodds came in, that they'd pretty much just given up on the season in February or whatever it was, January. The big problem is now you're going into a summer with like a fan base that is incredibly apathetic. And I don't even know if like another Hummel retro range would necessarily boost the confidence levels. Because at the minute, we're all just sitting there going, give us a nice home shirt. It's bad, though, isn't it? It's like, it's annoyingly apathetic. There's nothing in it.
Nah, it's like, that was next weekend's game. You normally like, up for the last game of the season, where there's nothing for it. Going, oh, I'm going to match, like, going out a few pints now, but there's nout. There's not a thing. I think the only way it gets some intrigue about it is if they appoint this new fella before the weekend, and let him have the last game of the season. Play a few of the young players, see what Matty Young's like in goal, if he can compete at a championship level, see what Tom Watson's like at championship level. Is his first name Ollie Bainbridge, so it is like championship level. And if it's just a one-off game, it'd get people intrigued and it'd get people going, I'm going to have a look at that just to see what they're like. But on the fact of Mike Dodds, I think he's just used this as some form of audition to get a head coach job elsewhere, which is why he's still trying to play out for 0-0 draws with more than two games left. And he's failed miserably, absolutely miserably. And if there's rumours about certain individuals going, you're probably looking come next week, you're probably out of a job by the beginning, about by mid-May. After everything that's gone on, you would maybe just give this new head coach a total fresh reset of the coaching staff.
I think I did want to bring that question up. I'll bring it up with you, Dave. I think there's two ways of thought on Mike Dodds. Look, I think he's been absolutely dreadful in terms of the way that he set us up. And to be fair, you were probably one of the only ones on this podcast particularly that said, you know, I wasn't that impressed with him just sitting behind the ball against Leeds. Like, whilst we were pretty buzzing, you actually said at the time, like, he just kind of sat back for ages, and I really hope he doesn't do that. And he kind of has. Like, five at the back at this stage of the season is just silly. But it seems that whenever there's been managers linked this season or in this interim period, there's been a discussion around, you know, would he or wouldn't he have to work with Mike Dodds? I do think he's been thrown under the bus a little bit, Dave, to be honest. Like, I think that he's obviously not cut out for the job. He probably shouldn't have had the job for as long as he had. And he's probably got the job at one of the most difficult times to be a Sunderland manager. So there's lots of caveats. But has he performed that badly that he's almost talked himself into a sacking from the position he originally left, Dave? Because if he's the first team coach, whether he's a nice bloke or whether he's been thrown under the bus or not, he's not shown me anything that has much faith in his coaching, because we're just dead defensive, Dave. Am I being too harsh there?
No, I think he's got a half decent personality, and I think he's probably relatable to some of the footballers. But that's as far as it extends, I think. I don't feel as though there's anything within his knowledge that he's shown to us as the public. I don't feel as though there's anything there that we feel as though we could go, yeah, there's something to hang on to there. There's something which is, he's talking about different patterns of play, or he's talking about like kind of ideas which we haven't heard of from top coaches before, and it's something a little bit different, and we're going to bamboozle the opposition. I don't think there's any of that. And I think that was my thought process. I said it before, I stand by it. I suppose his argument would now be, what, have we been lucky against Leeds twice? No, you've worked out a game plan. I'll give you that. But realistically, I think in both games, you haven't given us much chance to win the game. I think you've given us a very good chance of not losing the game, but I don't think you've given us a very good chance of winning the game. In the home game, yes, we've had a decent goal. I'm not... I don't want to blow my own trumpet. I don't want to be right that we've had such a terrible run and the points return is what it is in his tenure, third time round. But I could see it a mile off. And I think a lot of people, if they kind of took their rose-tinted glasses off, could have seen it as well. Of course, you want to buy into when you're picking up, what was it, his first time round with them two games, Leeds and West Brom,
yeah. Both good
was
wins, to be
points?
Fair to him. Both wins,
6 points, sorry.
That was 6 points, and then he got beat off Bristol City.
Yeah, so, like, yeah, of course you're going to buy into that when you've picked up, and they're big clubs. Leeds and West Brom are big clubs. You can't deny that. So, of course, you can off this.
West Brom are not that big. They're owned by Dan Ballard, mate.
Touché. But... I did worry about them all the time, and I still do. I certainly think whoever comes in, if they want to keep Dodds around on his own individual merit and they've seen him for a month, then fair play. Keep him. That's absolutely fine. If we got someone in, there's obviously been rumours of Maric this week, I think. And if you're looking at Will Still, so on, so forth.
Mm-hmm.
If they got the job and the club enforced that Dodds and Proctor had to stay, do I for a second trying to think about with a bit of balance, do I think for a second that them head coaches who come in fully trust Dodds and Proctor, or do I think that there's a bit of backstabbing going on every now and again? And unfortunately, I definitely think the latter. I definitely think it's a little case of jobs for the boys. I said it before, and I think Dodds is one of them, unfortunately. It's far too big a club for someone like that to be dealing with. Look at the caretaker managers we've had over the years. You know, Bawley did it for a bit. Sabria did it for a bit.
So who?
Quinney did it.
Yeah. Sabria. Sabria, the teenage witch. Aye, they're still in charge, aye.
Hey, I'm not hosting this week. I don't have to be politically correct. But they all had huge, huge names within the football club and within football. I don't think Dodds has got that. I mean, he's called Doddsy. Can you imagine Luke O'Neill going up to Kevin Ball and going, all right, Bally, what do you want us to do today?
Oh, we're Bally down the day.
And then don't get started on Sabria, because, you know, Sabria will just...
Just a teenage
I'm just deliberately saying it wrong now, just to annoy you.
Just a teenage witch. We're going to go into listeners' questions, because I don't really think there's a great deal of point going into the game. Look, we had chances. We probably should have got a point based on that. We didn't... But everything we've spoke about is just rinse and repeat for the past few weeks. You could probably even go all the way back to November with some of the performances. There's no point. Everything's just about the future, I think, in many ways. And the listeners' questions have been really good the past few weeks. And ultimately, like, the listeners probably determine what we discuss anyway. So we'll go on to that. But before we do, I mean, one really big thing that happened this week, and I think it's a weird one because, look, I never seen him play football, and I'm not going to pretend I did, because, like, I didn't. It was before my time. But it's been quite clear since I've been able to spell the word Sunland, S-U-N-L-U-N, that Charlie Hurley's a massive, huge, important player in this club's history, if not the player, that was adored, admired, loved, and an absolute colossus at the back for the football club long before I was born. He sadly passed this week. Which is just awful news, really. Like a big legend like Charlie Hurley, I think we've heard his song sang long before it was on Saturday in grounds around the country by Sunderland fans. We were all there when it was Charlie Hurley Day and he came out, and I think literally everyone was on their feet. It's quite clear that when it comes to a football club, Lee, you're nothing without your history, really. You're absolutely nothing without it. And I think, you know, whilst Kevin Phillips might be mine and your generation's hero, Charlie Hurley seems to have been a different generation's hero, but one that has continued and progressed to be loved even more than he was when he was on the pitch. And I think, you know, why we can't touch on maybe what he was like on the pitch, because we weren't alive. It's a huge, huge loss, isn't it, Lee? And obviously condolences to everyone affected by that.
It is, yeah. It's always sad when a legend of the football club passes away. Never mind as one as big as Charlie Hurley. If you go back and watch like all the season reviews of times gone by, he's always there or thereabouts at some point. Like I remember watching the 99-2000 season, and he was there. The 95-96 one, I think him and Gary Rowell possibly revealed the new shirts, something like that. But see, when my granddad was alive, he always spoke about like players like Charlie Hurley and how good he was. And ultimately, even though we didn't see them play, obviously stuff like my granddad and my dad fell in love with players like Charlie Hurley and all this, which just ultimately led us to support the football club. And seeing you've always have your legends of the past, and it is a shame when one passes away.
I think Dave, it's hard to add anything more to maybe what me and Lee have added. I'm going to ask you to do that though, nonetheless. But I think Charlie Hurley is, by the sheer fact he was voted out, I think, our player of the century, which arguably makes him Sunderland's greatest ever player based on the fact he was given that award. Just a really big loss to the club. Massive to lose anyone of any huge stature that has impacted Sunderland in any way, shape, size, or form. But Charlie Hurley's probably the one that's up there. And I think Lee spoke very well. I think we all had our granddads and great granddads, some of us that, you know, were able to be told about what Charlie Hurley was like on and off the pitch and what kind of a man mountain he was. And ultimately, that's formed part of our history, because that's one of the reasons we fell in love with Sunderland, because our grandparents or our parents have. And I just think, I know it's hard to add any more to that, Dave, but just a massive loss. Massive condolences to his family, everyone affected at Sunderland, but he's never going to be someone who's forgotten 100, 200 years from now, legend.
No, I think it's really poignant, and it must be quite a comfort blanket for his family, really, to know that his name will live on for so long, because I'm sure that's a lot of people's fear of death, really, kind of the non-existence anymore. So footballing wise, to kind of be known as the king must be fairly poignant. And then on top of that, my dad was telling us a story the other day. I mean, my dad's 74, bless him, and still getting around and whatever, but telling us about stories off the field. And I think that's one thing, for as much as, and you've alluded to it as well, Lee mentioned a lot of the on the field stuff. By all accounts, his off the field stuff was absolutely immense. He was every bit as much of a king off the pitch as he was on it. And to be as revered as much as you are on the field, and then to be revered as much off it, I think that speaks volumes for him. And fair play. I hope people like our words mean a bit to his family, because he certainly means a lot to us, you know.
Yeah, a lot of times say rest in peace, but I think very much rest in power for that man. A legend of the club, and forever will be for however long we exist. Lee, there's plenty funny questions. I haven't necessarily picked any out from the listeners, so let's just kind of take a stab and see what we've got. Right, I like this question, right, because I think most of us quite like Luke O'Neill on this. I'm quite a big fan of Luke O'Neill, but I think there's a reason this question needs to be asked, and I quite like it. So Rob Saunders asked, can we get promoted with Luke O'Neill at the back? In my opinion, we can't, but I would like to hear other people's thoughts.
You can't really progress. As much as I do like Luke O'Neill, next season I'd be quite annoyed if he was first choice centre back alongside either a Dan Ballard or somebody else. I think
there's obviously needs to be a succession period, please. And we should be targeting better than Luke O'Neill if we have aspirations to go to the Premier League. Yes, he's a good defender. And yes, he's spent a lot of time at the football club, but I think we need somebody else to play centre-back. If it's alongside Dan Ballard, which I hope it is, or someone else for that matter, I think we need to start thinking of replacing him. Because I think Brad mentioned it a few months ago, I think next season Dan Neil's going to be club captain, if he's still here. I think that's what they'd really intend to. I think they give Dan Neil the captain's armband, which ultimately leaves 0-9 without a role in the team, if that makes sense.
I think, so I'm a big fan of 0-9 as a personality and both as a player. And I think there's a lot bigger problems than Luke O'Neill at the club. However, the way the question is being positioned, I think is very fair. And I do think, I don't think we're a playoff side with a back four that we currently have. I think we need a bit more strength at the back. I mean, if you look at how many goals we've conceded this season in comparison to the teams around us, we've conceded far less. I think if you look at all of the teams from... So the only teams we've conceded more goals though for than conceded more goals than this season, is West Brom, Leeds, Leicester, and we've actually conceded less goals than Ipswich, which is quite an interesting stat. However, I still feel like there's a mistake in that defence, and I think over the past few weeks it's shown it's maybe not the defence you can build a promotion push around. So I would love to be wrong, but I'm going to agree with Robin Lee on that. I don't think 0-9 as a regular first team centre half gets you promoted, but I think it's one of the lesser problems we have, and I think that's maybe slightly backed up by the amount of goals we've conceded this season in comparison to other people. I think the problem may come more at the other end of the pitch. So I don't really want to ask this question because it's a bit negative, Dave, but like at the same time, it does jump out to me, right? So Mark Cotswold Magnum has asked, is relegation a real option next season? Or do you have faith that Speakman and Co can deliver in the summer? Now, obviously, there's rumours around Speakman as well, but let's, for the sake of this podcast, assume that the recruitment model stays the same and I'm saying nothing more.
I'm going to go with... I don't think there's any danger of relegation whatsoever, and that's probably very narrow-minded of me to say that, because recent history tells me that I shouldn't be so big-headed. I don't think we're going to slip back to that. We might not be as optimistic as we have been in previous years. But I don't think there's any danger of relegation. I really don't. Unless, of course, like Dan Neil, Patterson, Clark, all the aforementioned, get sold and then replaced with a load of 17-year-olds, which I guess is the model to a degree. I think they're probably now starting to understand the fan base and the club and the magnitude of what they've got to deal with. Now, whether it's Speakman who's understanding that, if he's still here, whether it's KLD who's understanding that, and does he get rid of Speakman? Does he get someone else in? However, I think there is a realisation within the club now. Don't ask me where this comes from because it's not based on fact. But I do think they now understand the magnitude of what they've got. Sunderland fans will probably accept a couple of seasons of mediocrity to a degree. But I can't see that grace period being any more than another two seasons. And I think even then, let's say we do finish 15th this season, next season would have to be 10th. The season after would have to be towards the playoffs. And then after that, that's it, done. Like, you have to be making big moves towards it. So I don't think there's any fear for me personally of relegation, even if Speakman was still there. But I think we're in for an interesting summer, one way or the other. I really hope it's for the positive, but I really think we're in for a very interesting summer this year.
Yeah, me too. I honestly think, as much as the the apathy and the kind of club giving up, honestly, if we're completely honest with each other, and almost said it in statement form when they appointed Dodds until the end of the season, has been incredibly boring. I think the summer makes it incredibly interesting, almost for the neutral net, let alone a Sunderland fan, because the thing with the problems we've had this season, if you look at them properly and where the problems have come from, they're a very, very easy fix. Within the club, we've still got some really good young talented players. My personal opinion, I think Clark's going to go. I think that one's, you might as well just kiss goodbye to him now. And okay, fair enough. But I know there's worries over the likes of Dan Ballard. I would be really surprised if Ballard was to leave with the money we would probably want for him, the money we could probably ask for him. The slight dip in form he's had towards the end of the season and the injury concerns he's had throughout his time at Sunderland, which has been probably more than you'd want if you were a Premier League club. I can't see the likes of Dan Ballard and that going, if I'm honest with you. And I would be very surprised if Patterson went anywhere to be number two, which is where all the links are there, apart from potentially Celtic, where he could be number one. So I think we'll end the summer with a lot of these good young players, you know, the Jobes and all that still within there. So therefore, the problem lies in what we said for a number of weeks, that we need experience to kind of guide these players through. These good young players don't stop becoming good young players. They're going through a really rough patch and they've got no way to guide them. We said that weeks ago, we don't need to go too deep into it. So the fix for that is very easy. You bring in someone who, or you bring in a number of players who can sort of guide the team through. There's links towards Chris Willock this week. I'm not going to lie, that was something I heard a couple of weeks back, so I wouldn't be surprised if there was something within that. I think that would be a good signing. He's 26. His brothers are seeing next Tuesday. But nonetheless, I think he would improve. I think he would improve our team, and he would add experience and championship experience at that point without being sort of an aging old man. And I think more signings of that ilk would really help. So it's quite an easy fix if you identify correctly the players you want to bring in at the right age with the right level of experience. Then your younger players should flourish more. Your management situation, well, they've had long enough to look at which managers they want to bring in. So they should realistically at this point be making the right choice. On top of that, put your hand in your pocket a bit. I know sometimes people think, oh, splash and cash is not the thing, but you cannot survive in the championship unless you put your hand in your pocket, even just a little bit. I'm not saying spend 30, 40 million, but bring us a bloody striker in and then maybe bring an experienced backup that's a little bit cheaper. You know, push the boat out, bring in a Kiefer Moore, for example, somebody like that. The fixes at Sunderland are very, very basic and very, very simple. However, if they plow on with this model and don't learn from the mistakes, my personal opinion is yes. The evidence of what Mike Dodds has done, which is a bad managerial appointment, mixed with a team that doesn't have enough experience, mixed with players that aren't a team that hasn't got key players in key positions, such as forward and defensive midfield, alongside those things, indicate that this team would be in relegation trouble. If Sheffield beat us next week, then they're 3 points behind us. Now, look, Sheffield Wednesday were absolutely dog shit when we beat them 3-0, and that was September. So for me, the summer, without going on too much of a rant, is hugely important and probably one of the most important in our history, because this determines whether we continue the progression and this was a blip and apathy at best and a little bit of a pain in the arse that we got a few things wrong and Michael Beale was part of the club, or it becomes a kind of terminal thing where it's slow and it's backwards and it's painful. So I think a lot depends on this summer. If we don't right the wrongs, yeah, I'm genuinely quite worried about relegation battle, 100%. And I think that's based on the evidence of the season that's there. And I don't mean just fix one or two things. You've got to change a lot. You've got to get the right appointment. You've got to bring the right experience in. You have to fix your problem positions. Very, very easy fixes to make. Some clubs need completely dug out and turned over and made new again. This one doesn't need that. If Kirill recognises that, there's no reason we could go on and have a really good season and maybe even get back in the playoff contention. If he doesn't learn from those mistakes, yes, I would be concerned based on the evidence of this model that he's built together of buying 17 Timothy Pembeles and 18 Abdullah Bars doesn't work. One thing I did want to ask, I think it's worth saying that a lot of things can change, Lee, but Maric, shall we say, has been rumoured, linked this week, 31, former Borussia Dortmund assistant manager, current Bayern Munich under-19 manager. I think it's quite widely known that I think it was Anthony Barry that we were considering in January before Michael Beale did his PowerPoint presentation. There's a lot of plus points and a lot of fingers pointing towards Maric at the moment. Now, a lot can change, is what I think we all will be very aware of. But if he was to be the man, it's a high risk, potential high reward, I think, Lee, if he was to come in and very much in the Will Still mould.
I'd agree. I'd say it's a high risk, high reward. It's kind of following into what a lot of other championship clubs have done. I think someone put out earlier on, you've got like Kieran McKenna was an 18s manager. Then he's went on, obviously got promoted to the first team setup, then got the Ipswich job. The same with Michael Carrick. Things the same with Danny Rowe. Same with Daniel Farke. When he originally got the Norwich job. And also you got to take into account as well, and now he's a big name in the big name, but Xabi Alonso was Real Sociedad B team manager before he got the Bayer Leverkusen manager's job. Just because he hasn't got that nailed on experience of what, like, say, a Steve Cooper or a Paul Heckenbottom's got, it doesn't mean he knows what he's doing. It's like, I think I read somewhere that he's also Bayern Munich's head of coaching and playing philosophy, something like that. So, and also, obviously, what you put out the other day when a lot of Bayern Munich fans were clamming him to get the job over someone like Ralf Rangnick is good signs. It's good signs when you're looking to appoint someone like that, because you're not just going like rather have someone like that than radio silence, or like go for someone like him than say go like Michael Beale 2.0, something like that. There's a lot of experienced championship managers who've took over teams and hasn't worked out well. It is a risk, but as you see, I think it's got massive high reward for it to come good. You'll also probably get the players on side as well, because if the show is like he is knows about your stuff, been in the game for that long, that he'd be I think the players would believe in him more from someone like him than someone in the ilk of like a Michael Beale.
I think probably the most interesting aspect of Maric, if it was to be him, which, you know, a lot of things are beginning to point towards it. A lot of things can change overnight. You never know. But let's assume, you know, hopefully this could be the man that's in charge. He started his coaching career at the age of 17 with sort of a local side called Handenberg. You can tell I've deep dived into Google here. But he also studied psychology at university. Now, I know that's people going, what does that matter? I think we've seen this season, especially with the young players and having no one to guide them, no one with that experience, we've seen how important psychology and sports science is within football. I think Sam Allardyce was a big, big advocate of sports science. So I think if you're bringing someone in that is going to have a largely younger squad, and look, we've said before, we hope there's experience in there, but I predominantly don't have too many problems with having 6 or 7 young players in the team guided by, you know, another 4 experienced ones. I'm not saying I want Danny Bart in all 11 positions, far from it. But I think what we've seen with younger players is that the psychology of football is incredibly important. The psychology of winning, the psychology of holding on to a lead, the game management, that kind of thing. And whilst I don't know what his degree is, I haven't listened to the podcast that's about with him, and a few people have messaged about it. I think someone who's like quite intelligent in the way that he speaks and what he does as a person will play a huge, huge part. And whilst he's only had that at youth level, he is going to be working with predominantly younger players. Now, he didn't have the most successful time at Leeds when he was with Jesse Marsh, but I think if you look through, you know, a few comments on forums and stuff like that, which I've managed to have a little dig through from Leeds fans, a lot of them seem to think that him and Marsh didn't bond and mix very well, and a lot of the decisions were not Maric's, they were more Jesse Marsh's. And, you know, there's a bulk of Leeds fans that feel like if he'd taken the route of maybe listening to Maric more, they might have had slight more success, or he might have had slight more success. But look, we could be chatting about a bloke that's never going to manage Sunderland as far as we're concerned. A lot of things can change. I've said that many, many times. But if it was to be him, I think I'll be relatively pleased based on the little that I know about him. Dave, we've got a couple of daft ones to finish, because this has been actually quite good. I really like this question, and I think you'll be able to answer it. It's from Stephen Nicholson. Talked about managers. What does Sunderland offer a prospective manager?
It's a great question, and I think if it was coming from someone outside of the fan base, I'd probably need to expand a bit more. But within the fan base, we all know what we've got to offer. Football in the Northeast is just, it becomes a bit of a religion. It's a great basis for footballers to be at a good level in a packed out stadium. And when you get things right, the atmosphere and the buzz around the whole place, not just the football club, but around the whole of Sunderland is absolutely phenomenal. And I hope I'm around for the one day, if it ever comes, because I'm not counting my chickens by any stretch. But if we ever win some kind of decent trophy, or if we ever qualify for a European competition, the person who will be in charge at that point probably will never have to buy a drink ever again, I don't think. And I think that sums it up. We've got everything you need to become not only successful and a godlike person here, but it's a great basis and foundation for you to go on to bigger and better things. Now, to us, we're probably not going to say there's too many bigger and better things than Sunderland. But in all honesty, you know, yeah, we wouldn't want to lose you to an Everton, to a Crystal Palace, to someone like that. No disrespect to them clubs. But if you went off to a Manchester United, you went off to a Real Madrid, you went off to a Barcelona after being to Sunderland beforehand and kind of making something your own, I think we'd fully back that person. And I think that'd be brilliant for the club and for the individual who brought it along, really.
If there's any manager that gets a job at Real Madrid after being a Sunderland, I'll bite my own cock off. So, I...
Man, I can dream. It's the hope that kills us. It's the hope that kills us. And I'm not saying it's going to happen anytime soon. But I genuinely think there is the chance to... Listen, Everton every now and again, a challenging for Europe.
To
not
be fair,
recently. But...
Ancelotti went to Real Madrid from Everton, and I think maybe Everton fans will get annoyed by this, but I think we're relatively as big, you know, maybe not as successful. But one thing I do want to point out, because we've only got about a minute left here and it's been quite cathartic, this is that Dave told us beforehand that he was drunk, so this is not sober Dave. This is not hosting Dave. This is not nervous, anxious, oh, I'm hosting brothers, oh, Dave. It is, oh, I've had a few beers, Dave. So his dream of the next manager going on to manage Sunderland and then fucking Real Madrid might be a little bit far-fetched by something like Guinness. And I think there's no other way to leave that, really. So, Dave, fucking hell, slow down. Get yourself a glass of water, cup of coffee. Lee, thank you very much.
Not a problem.
I'm going for another beer. Happy Sunday, everyone.
I'm going to need to stop doing this.